Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Broden Arcipreet et al. Interprofessional Staffing in Pediatric Critical Care, Secondary Analysis of a National Cross-Sectional Survey from 2022 to 2023. Objectives. The 2019 American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations for PICU and pediatric cardiac ICU staffing are that it includes intensivists, advanced practice providers or APPs, medical trainees, nurses, respiratory therapists, and pharmacy consultation. We have examined interprofessional staffing in U.S. pediatric critical care units in 2022 to 2023. Design. Secondary analysis of 2022 to 2023 data from a national survey of ICUs merged with the 2019 American Hospital Association database. We compared tertiary and quaternary units staffing. Setting: U.S. tertiary and quaternary PICUs and pediatric cardiac ICUs in 2022 to 2023. Patients included all pediatric patients. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We included 49 PICUs and pediatric cardiac ICUs, including 11 tertiary and 38 quaternary across 26 states. 19 of 49 were in children's hospitals, all were teaching hospitals, and 24 of 49 were considered large units with 16 to 30 beds. Intensivists were available in 48 of 49 units, on-site 24 hours a day in 37 of 49, worked 7 consecutive days in 32 of 49, and had no other clinical responsibilities during pediatric critical care service in 36 of 49. There were 31 of 49 APPs, 38 of 49 fellows, and 44 of 49 residents available in the units. Nurses were assigned to care for one patient receiving mechanical ventilation in 21 of 49 units or two patients in 26 of 49 units. For non-invasive mechanical ventilation, a ratio of one nurse to two patients was most common in 45 of 49. In 48 of 49 units, respiratory therapists were available on all shifts. Pharmacists participated in care during weekday shifts in 44 of 49 units. Pharmacists participated in care on weeknights in 18 of 49 units, on weekend days in 29 of 49 units, and on weekend nights in 16 of 49 units. Compared with tertiary units, quaternary unit practice was associated with having more of the following: 24-hour intensivist coverage, APPs, fellows and residents, respiratory therapists throughout all shifts, and more respiratory therapists without responsibilities outside the ICU throughout all shifts, with a p-value less than 0.05 for all. Conclusions. In this 2022-2023 national sample, pediatric intensivists, APPs, registered nurses, pharmacists, and respiratory therapists were available to care for critically ill children. Intensivist, APP, and respiratory therapy staffing varied by PICU level. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Dillon et al. Extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation deployment for cardiac arrest in the pediatric emergency department setting, a 2000 to 2023 report for the American Heart Association's Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Investigators. Objectives. Pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest events leading to extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or ECPR, most often occur in the ICU in cardiac patients. Since there is little information about using ECPR for pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest in the emergency department, we aim to describe this population. Design. The American Heart Association's Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Registry of Pediatric In-Hospital Cardiac Arrest from 2000 to 2023, a retrospective study. Setting: emergency departments in hospitals contributing to the Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Registry. Patients: children less than 18 years old experiencing index in-hospital cardiac arrest events in the emergency department where ECPR was deployed to achieve return of circulation. Only cardiac and non-cardiac illness categories were included. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We identified 51 children with a median age of 2 years and an interquartile range of 0.3 to 5 years. Pulseless electrical activity was the initial pulseless rhythm in 24 of 46 patients, or 52%, and pulseless ventricular tachycardia in 4 of 46 patients, or 9%. Median CPR duration was 68 minutes with an interquartile range of 48 to 92 minutes, with a median number of epinephrine doses being 12 and an interquartile range of 7 to 19. Non-survival versus survival was associated with greater use of IV calcium in 28 of 30 versus 8 of 12, a difference of 35%, a 95% confidence interval of 8.2 to 58.2%, and a p-value equal to 0.01. Overall survival was 17 of 51 or 33.3%, with a 95% confidence interval of 22 to 47%. Cardiac, as opposed to non-cardiac underlying diagnosis, was associated with a higher percentage of successful ECPR with return of circulation, 26 of 27 versus 18 of 24, with a difference of 21%, a 95% confidence interval of 1.8 to 45%, and a p-value equal to 0.025. Conclusion. In the Get With The Guidelines Resuscitation Registry of Pediatric In-Hospital Cardiac Arrest covering 23 years, ECPR deployment for in-hospital cardiac arrest in the ED was reported 51 times. Overall survival to discharge occurred in one-third of cases. We also noted that an underlying cardiac disorder was associated with higher proportions achieving return of circulation and discharge survival. Further studies are needed to better understand this population and see whether there are missed opportunities in the emergency department beyond the median of one case per year when ECPR could have been deployed. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Parikh et al. IPASS to PICU, a structured handoff program to improve interfacility referral communication for PICU transfer. Objectives. Interfacility transfers from frontline settings to the PICU can place children at risk for harm due to handoff miscommunication. We aim to evaluate the effectiveness of a structured interfacility handoff program in improving communication between referring and receiving clinicians and across the PICU admitting team. Design. Prospective intervention study using a mixed methods approach, including surveys, chart review, and semi-structured interviews before and after IPASS to PICU implementation. Setting. Academic tertiary referral PICU. Patients, children of 0 to 18 years old referred by external hospitals for urgent PICU admission. Intervention, structured handoff program, IPASS to PICU, based on elements of high-quality handoffs adapted for interfacility PICU transfers. Measurements and main results. A total of 220 patients were included, including 110 pre-intervention and 110 post-intervention. Multivariable regression analysis adjusting for potential confounders showed no association between use of IPASS to PICU and receiving PICU physician reports of key handoff information omissions, with an odds ratio of 0.92, a 95% confidence interval of 0.3 to 2.82, and a p-value equal to 0.88. However, there was a decrease in the proportion of admitting PICU staff per patient who did not receive key handoff information, with a pre-intervention mean of 16% and a standard deviation of 21%, and a post-intervention mean of 10% and a standard deviation of 16%, with a p-value equal to 0.032. There were also more patients for whom receiving PICU physicians reported being well-prepared before admission, 95% pre-intervention versus 100% post-intervention, and a p-value equal to 0.026. Post-intervention, 94 patients, or 86%, had a completed IPASS to PICU note. However, only a median of 50% with an interquartile range of 34 to 66% of admitting PICU staff per patient viewed the note before admission. Stakeholders identified barriers and facilitators of IPASS to PICU implementation. Conclusions. A structured interfacility handoff program improved communication of key information across PICU admitting team members and increased reported preparedness of receiving PICU physicians. Identified barriers and facilitators of implementation can be used to inform, redesign, and adapt to this program for uptake and use in other PICUs. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Mueller et al. Feasibility of early mobility during pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, single center retrospective cohort study from 2018 to 2024. Objectives: to describe the feasibility of a progressive early mobility protocol in PICU patients requiring support with extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO. Design: single-center retrospective analysis of data from the six-year period post-implementation of an early mobility protocol. Setting: medical surgical PICU within a standalone academic children's hospital in the United States. Patients included all PICU patients 0 to 18 years old supported on ECMO post-implementation of a unit-wide early mobility protocol from June 2018 to July 2024. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 62 patients met inclusion criteria. Overall, 52 of 62 patients, or 84%, underwent early mobility while on ECMO, with 18 of 52, or 35%, undergoing early mobility achieving at least level 2 or level 3 activity. Of 23 long-duration ECMO patients, IDS requiring ECMO for greater than or equal to 10 days, 14 of 23 patients achieved level 2 or 3 activity. Of 297 unique early mobility sessions, signs of intolerance occurred in 18 of 297 sessions, or 6.1%, with a 95% confidence interval of 3.9 to 9.4%. These occurred in 10 of 52 unique patients, or 19.2%, with a 95% confidence interval of 10.8 to 31.9%. There were no serious adverse events attributable to early mobility, 0 of 297, with the upper limit of the 95% confidence interval, 1%. However, an early mobility session in one patient was followed by recognition of neurologic changes on examination and a new diagnosis of stroke. Conclusions. Over 6 years in our PICU from 2018 to 2024, we found that implementation of a progressive multidisciplinary early mobility protocol during ECMO was feasible. Our data also provide local metrics for rate of mobilization and level of activity achieved, signs of intolerance, and serious adverse events. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Patton et al. Ventricular arrhythmias during extracorporeal circulatory support for cardiac indications. Outcomes in a single center retrospective cohort from 2020 to 2023. Objectives. Veno-arterial extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, can be used for pediatric patients in heart failure because of congenital or acquired heart disease. Even though these patients are at risk of arrhythmias, data are limited regarding the prevalence and types of arrhythmias and their association with adverse outcomes. We present our single-center experience of arrhythmia during pediatric cardiac ECMO support and the associated outcomes. Design. Single-center retrospective cohort from 2020 to 2023. Setting, cardiac ICU in a quaternary care center in New York. Patients included pediatric patients requiring ECMO for cardiac indications, including extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation, cardiogenic shock, hypoxemia secondary to lack of pulmonary blood flow, or inability to wean from cardiopulmonary bypass. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We identified 74 patients undergoing 83 ECMO runs during 2020 to 2023. Arrhythmias occurred in 27 of 83 ECMO runs, or 33%, with a 95% confidence interval of 23 to 44%, including ventricular arrhythmias in 14 of 83 runs, or 17%. We did not identify an association between any arrhythmia while on ECMO support and death or heart transplantation. However, ventricular arrhythmias were associated with greater hazard of death or heart transplantation, with a hazard ratio of 5.7, a 95% confidence interval of 1.2 to 27.8, and a p-value equal to 0.03. Similarly, we failed to identify an association between any arrhythmia on ECMO and wean failure, with a p-value equal to 0.09. However, ventricular arrhythmias on ECMO were associated with greater hazard of wean failure, with a hazard ratio of 18.8, a 95% confidence interval of 2.9 to 121, and a p-value equal to 0.002. Any arrhythmia on ECMO was also associated with longer ECMO duration, 189 versus 90.1 hours, and a p-value less than 0.001, particularly ventricular arrhythmias. 335 versus 94 hours and a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. In our 2020 to 2023 single-center experience in pediatric cardiac cases requiring veno-arterial ECMO support for cardiac failure, the prevalence of arrhythmias was substantial, 1 in 3 ECMO runs. Of note, ventricular arrhythmias on ECMO were associated with greater hazard of transplant-free survival, ECMO wean failure, and prolonged ECMO duration. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Gillette et al. inflammatory markers for nosocomial infections in pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, single-center retrospective cohort from 2017 to 2022. Objectives: to explore the diagnostic performance of white blood cell count, C-reactive protein, or CRP, and procalcitonin in identifying nosocomial infections in pediatric patients supported with extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO. Design: single-center retrospective cohort of pediatric patients supported with ECMO from November 2017 to December 2022. Setting: PICU, neonatal ICU, and cardiac ICU in a quaternary children's hospital. Patients included critically ill patients younger than 18 years supported with ECMO for greater than 24 hours. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We identified 154 ECMO runs involving 151 pediatric patients. New infections were detected in 63 of 154 ECMO runs, or 41%. There were 8 of 1,442 positive blood cultures, or 0.5%, 9 of 617 positive urine cultures, or 1.4%, and 60 of 722 positive respiratory cultures, or 8.3%. Antibiotics were administered on 1,217 ECMO days, or 84.7%, and 98.7% of the patients received more than 48 hours of antibiotics. On evaluating the diagnostic performance of tests for distinguishing new infection, using the area under the receiver operating characteristic curve, we found that both CRP and procalcitonin had poor diagnostic accuracy. The area under the receiver operating characteristic curve for CRP was 0.66 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.6 to 0.72, and the area under the receiver operating characteristic curve for procalcitonin was 0.62 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.53 to 0.72. The white blood cell count showed no discrimination, with area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.51 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.44 to 0.57. Notably, a procalcitonin value less than 1.77 nanograms per milliliter had a 95% negative predictive value, CRP less than 36.5 milligrams per liter had a 97% negative predictive value, and white blood cell count less than 11,000 cells per microliter had a 95% negative predictive value. Conclusions: in our retrospective exploratory evaluation of nosocomial infection in ECMO patients from 2017 to 2022, no laboratory marker demonstrated adequate discriminative ability for indicating the presence of infection. However, normal values for these markers may help clinicians decide whether unnecessary antibiotic treatment can be reduced and whether surveillance cultures can be eliminated in pediatric patients on ECMO. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Scheller et al. Child Opportunity Index and 30-Day Readmission Among Children Discharged with New Long-Term Mechanical Ventilation via Tracheostomy, a Pediatric Health Information System Database Study, from 2014 to 2023. Objectives: to examine the association between neighborhood-level social determinants of health as measured by the Child Opportunity Index and 30-day all-cause same-hospital readmission among children newly discharged on long-term mechanical ventilation via tracheostomy. Design: multicenter retrospective cohort study. Setting: 47 pediatric hospitals contributing data to the Pediatric Health Information System database. Patients included children of 0 to 18 years old with newly used long-term mechanical ventilation via tracheostomy between 2014 and 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The Child Opportunity Index is a composite measure of neighborhood-level social determinants of health reported in quintiles, very low to very high opportunity. The primary outcome was 30-day all-cause same-hospital readmission, defined as the first observation or inpatient unit readmission to the index hospital where tracheostomy and ventilator initiation had occurred. Other clinical characteristics and demographic data were collected. Of the 5,927 children identified in the Pediatric Health Information System, or FIS, database, 26% of children with an N equal to 1,521 were readmitted within 30 days. half of the cohort lived in very low to low opportunity neighborhoods. Multivariable mixed effects models did not identify an association between 30-day readmission and living in lower compared with very high child opportunity index neighborhoods. Factors associated with lower odds of readmission were older age at discharge and discharge to other healthcare facilities. Older age at discharge, for example, greater than or equal to 11 years versus less than 6 months, had an adjusted odds ratio of 0.64 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.49 to 0.84. Discharge to other healthcare facilities versus home discharge had an adjusted odds ratio of 0.64 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.54 to 0.76. Regarding length of stay, there was a 3% greater odds of readmission for every additional 30 days, with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.03 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.04. Conclusions. The FIS database from 2014 to 2023 shows that around 1 in 4 admissions discharged with new long-term mechanical ventilation via tracheostomy were readmitted within 30 days. However, we failed to identify an association between residents in lower compared with very high child opportunity index neighborhoods and 30-day readmission. Given the early readmission burden, future efforts should prioritize interventions to reduce hospital returns. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Toome et al. Validation of minimally invasive and non-invasive hemodynamic monitoring in adolescents, the Pediatric Cardiac Output Monitoring Observational or POGO study. Objectives. Minimally invasive cardiac output monitoring technologies lack validation in the adolescent population. We aim to test the accuracy and precision of the FlowTrack arterial pressure cardiac output and ClearSight photoplethysmography cardiac output technologies in adolescents undergoing elective cardiac catheterization. Design: prospective, single-arm, non-randomized observational study. Setting: cardiac catheterization laboratory at 3 freestanding pediatric hospitals in the United States. Patients included adolescent patients 12 to 18 years of age undergoing surveillance cardiac catheterization after heart transplantation. Interventions: Swan-Ganz pulmonary artery catheterization with the intermittent thermodilution cardiac output technique was used as the gold standard for cardiac output measurements. Arterial pressure cardiac output was measured using an existing femoral arterial sheath, and photoplethysmography cardiac output was measured utilizing a volumetric cuff placed on the finger of the upper extremities. Two sets of simultaneous intermittent thermodilution cardiac output, arterial pressure cardiac output, and photoplethysmography cardiac output measurements were compared. Bias and level of concordance were assessed using Bland-Altman analysis. Measurements and main results. Out of the 89 subjects enrolled, 73 underwent measurements and provided a total of 60 sets of measurements for each device. The median age was 16 years with an interquartile range of 14 to 17 years with a median body surface area of 1.6 meters squared and an interquartile range of 1.5 to 1.8 meters squared. The median average intermittent cardiac index was 2.7 liters per minute per meter squared with an interquartile range of 2.3 to 3.1 liters per minute per meter squared. FlowTrack arterial pressure cardiac output mean bias was 0.32 liters per minute per meter squared with an interquartile range of 0.2 to 0.44 liters per minute per meter squared with a precision of 0.7 liters per minute per meter squared and an interquartile range of 0.58 to 0.82 liters per minute per meter squared. ClearSight photoplethysmography cardiac output mean bias was 0.28 liters per minute per meter squared with a 95% confidence interval of 0.16 to 0.41 liters per minute per meter squared with a precision of 0.71 liter per minute per meter squared and a 95% confidence interval of 0.59 to 0.84 liters per minute per meter squared. No serious adverse events were reported related to the devices. Conclusions. The minimally and non-invasive cardiac output measurements with FlowTrack and ClearSight arterial pressure cardiac output show acceptable bias and precision under standardized elective clinical conditions in an adolescent pediatric population, making them useful tools in the routine clinical management of critically ill children. Abstract 9 is the PCCM trial by Rahman et al. Restrictive versus standard fluid management in mechanically ventilated children admitted to PICU, a pilot randomized control trial. Objective: fluid overload in PICU patients is associated with poor outcomes. In 2021, we aimed to assess the feasibility of a randomized control trial, or RCT, of restrictive IV fluids versus usual IV fluids. Design: pilot, parallel arm, open label, randomized control trial. Setting: two PICUs in Australia and one in Switzerland. Patients: during 2021 to 2023, we recruited PICU patients aged younger than 18 years who were expected to be invasively ventilated or were already ventilated for greater than 6 hours. Interventions: patients were randomly allocated to either a restrictive IV fluid strategy or usual care for 48 hours. The restrictive strategy included lower maintenance fluid, smaller fluid boluses and less drug dilution, and earlier diuretics or peritoneal dialysis. Measurements and main results. Of 1,224 eligible patients, 235 parents were approached and 158 consented, IDEST 67%. One child excluded post-randomization. Median age was 1.3 years with an interquartile range of 0.3 to 7 years, which meant that the trial did not meet the a priori target recruitment rate. The mean number of patients recruited per month was 6.8, with a standard deviation of 3.6. None of 80 patients recruited to the restrictive strategy attained a negative fluid balance greater than 10% body weight within 24 hours, compared with 5 of 77 or 6% in the usual care arm. Median fluid balance at 48 hours post-randomization in the restrictive strategy was 11.1 milliliters per kilogram with an interquartile range of 13.7 to 40.2 milliliters per kilogram. Median fluid balance 48 hours post-randomization in the usual care arm was 8.6 milliliters per kilogram with an interquartile range of 18.7 to 38.8 milliliters per kilogram. Median survival free of the PICU for the restrictive care was 25 days with an interquartile range of 21.3 to 26 days, and median survival free of the PICU for the usual care was 24 days with an interquartile range of 22 to 26 days. Conclusions: this 2021 to 2023 pilot randomized control trial shows that the restrictive versus standard fluid management in mechanically ventilated children, or REDUCE-1 protocol, would not be feasible if extended to a full randomized control trial as currently designed. Future approaches may require stricter guidance regarding the intervention or use of bundled care. The PCCM narrative this month is entitled "The Chest That Fell into Shadows: A Surgeon's Reflection on Pectus Deformity" by Dr. Rajkamal Vishnu. Pectus deformity, particularly pectus excavatum, is a congenital chest wall condition where the sternum is depressed inward, often leading to physical and psychological challenges. While frequently diagnosed in adolescence, some children remain undetected until the deformity becomes severe, affecting cardiopulmonary function and self-image. Mom brought him in quietly and anxiously. A thin boy with lowered eyes, a chest that dipped inward as though trying to hide before anyone noticed. I placed my scope gently, listening past the sunken chest, where lungs struggled for space, and the heartbeat pushed sideways from its rightful place, by cartilage that grew inward. A murmur from the heart, knocking against the chest. "Does it hurt when you run?" I asked. A nod heavy with years of tight chest, palpitations, and fatigue he never knew how to explain. His mother tried to keep a smile, but her fingers kept rubbing the depressed chest as if wishing she could fill it in with her own breath. Remembering every night she watched his chest sink deeper and feared the heart beneath might someday fail to rise. Behind the curved chest lived many things. Slouched shoulders trying to hide, the spine bending forward in a posture shaped to self-protect, the whispered teasing at school, the shirt worn in layers like armor, the refusal to swim before peers even on the hottest days, the quiet worry of whether this was part of a syndrome with a name longer than hope. I told him, "You are not broken. You are not alone. Pectus is not a curse. It is biology. And today we can lift the sternum as gently as opening a window, letting light and air return to a room that had forgotten both. Shoulders open, lungs free, heart beating in space they were always meant to have." Hearing this silently, his eyes lifted for the first time, hope filling the quiet room. And in that small upward glance, I saw the truth. The procedure would change his chest. Compassion had already begun changing his future. This concludes the abstracts for the August 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.